Robert Bales pleads guilty to the premeditated murder of 16 men, women, and children in two villages in Afghanistan. Pleads guilty and admits to each crime. Although he does not entirely remember some of the things to which he pleads guilty, he deduces rather than remembers. And yet he knows he is guilty. His wife sits behind him. The two children have been left at home. He will live his life in prison. He does not feel he can ever tuck his own children into bed again, having murdered other children in their beds while they slept. Where did this come from, this monster? Photographs. Photographs of young people, young men and young women, published not long ago in the newspaper, maybe 2 or 3 years. You saw them. They were young men and women. They were SS guards at Auschwitz. But these photographs, they were not the usual concentration camp photographs that we have seen and sucked in our breath when we saw. No, these were young people eating blueberries out of a bowl that they had gathered on one of their afternoons off. Girls sitting in camp chairs, laughing and talking. A group of them sitting on a fence and singing. One of them, the senior, he was walking his dog, playing with his dog, coming in from hunting. Relaxing and playing. Young people having a good time. Young people with a tough job. Well, where does this come from, these normal-looking people? Relaxing in the afternoon after having incinerated babies in the morning. What is it that has taken? Was that? Did they ask themselves that? Did they ever? And what did you do in the war, Mom? What did you do in the war, Daddy? Oh, not much. Oh, well, nothing. Nothing of much interest. How to explain it to their children, how to explain it to themselves. It was a monster with one red eye, a crowd that saw him die, not I. It cannot have been me. Those two people, the girl with a bowl of blueberries and the girl whose footsteps tapped down the hall to get the next group of people to be burned, cannot be the same person. The book in which this poem appears is dedicated to Reinhold Niebuhr and his wife Ursula, both theologians. He the more famous, she as brilliant. It was Niebuhr whose long academic career and capacity to change his ideas, having been a communist in his youth, like so many intellectuals in the 20s and 30s, and disillusioned with the liberal vision, the optimism of it, for which he saw less and less evidence to support a position of optimism, ending up inventing and giving his name to what we now call Christian realism. An Augustinian version of the fallen nature of human beings. That even our best actions are tinctured with something other than the good, the There is no righteous one, not purely, not one that anybody, given the right circumstances, who is to say what we might do? He wrote, and Auden read, Moral Man and Immoral Society, one of Niebuhr's many books, that book which brought us the image of the good German. That is, a person who loves his country and will follow his leader and will overlook his own desires in obedience to the authority. A person who does not consult his own will, but the will of the person whose orders he has covenanted to follow. Moral men and women, Niebuhr says, they are sometimes in groups the most dangerous of all, because they will follow what they are told is right, and they will question their own inborn sense of morality. Indeed, Niebuhr wonders if we have one. The individual righteousness that many think will save the day. All we have to do is all be really good people, and then we will have a really good country. Well, maybe, and perhaps not. People in groups develop a group think that can overrule the evidences of their own senses and the evidence of their moral sense. It has happened many times. In many countries, it has happened here. And I do not doubt that as long as there are people in groups, it will happen again. Those happy young people in those photographs, everything that they do to be happy and to have a good time, Auden knows that it will be poisoned, maybe a lot, but maybe slightly, but it always be poisoned somewhat. The mock chase and the mock capture, the racing and tussling and splashing, the panting and the laughter. Be listening for the cry, though, and the stillness to follow after. Wherever the sun shines, brooks run, books are written, there will also be this death. Robert Bales can't get away from it, no matter how long he lives in prison. The young SS guards, they did not escape it, even if nobody else ever knew, even if they never told their children, ever. It will always have been. The terrible limits of human righteousness. The fact, unarguable, that our very intelligence can work to our damnation. That event which ended the war in the Pacific, an event which Niebuhr opposed, the bombing of Hiroshima, ended the war, probably did save lives over a wide view, but in an instant snuffed out the lives of millions, turned them into x-rays and then into vapor, and then they were gone, leaving behind the odd wristwatch, teaspoon, bowl here and there. That event which did end the war did lead us into a hell from which W.H. Auden writes, and from which Niebuhr ponders the nature of human sin. At the end of the poem, see a Jesus hauling people up into some heaven somewhere at the end of this poem. What do we see? We see the organisms, our own. We see the blood coursing through our vessels as it's supposed to do. We see our bodies working, whether we're good or not. And we see the animals going about their business, noting the death, but not transfixed by it. There will be an order in the world. The chaos that we create will coexist with it, but the order will also be. Both men died before string theory came along, before a lot of things, before we really thought about the butterfly flapping his wings in China that makes a tsunami somewhere else. They didn't have a sense yet of the ecology of all things, not just of nature, but of politics, that one thing causes something else, that you squeeze something here and it blows up here like a water balloon. We look at the long distances between cause and effect in a different way than they did. We look at the order that underlies what looks to us to be chaos, of the fractal, which arises from chaos and yet contains an order that surprises all of us, so that our descent into chaos and perversion shocks and surprises us, but so does the ultimate order of all things. And the animals, the unsentient animals, they know it before we know it. How about that? Auden comes close to us in this gap between our experiences. The place he has also come close to us is in our Book of Common Prayer. Unlike Harriet Beecher Stowe, who, as near as I could tell, did not take words from the Book of Common Prayer, Auden put some in, didn't he? He was on the committee of poets and musicians, perhaps some people here in this room, who did a translation of the Psalter for our book. When you have ever had the misfortune to bring your prayer book to an ecumenical service and they are all reading the Psalms from something, and you notice a certain disparity in the number of feet, and you pause, as you so often do, to give thanks to God that he made you an Episcopalian. Because your Psalter has a grace and a majesty and an essential correctness insofar as it has been given to me to know. These people who made this new Psalter, they translated. They decided not to work from any other English translation, but to take a step back, or one or two steps back, to make it something that would be true in an academic way, but would also be true in a musical way, would be a thing that we would be ennobled by reading together. There would be music in it, even when the Psalms are just spoken. We would hear the echo of what it was like to hear these ancient hymns in the temple where they were first sung. Not fully, but a hint here and there. This he gave to us, as I recall, talking to somebody who was in that group. He didn't stay with the committee till the bitter end, but he continued to write letters to them about the Psalter. And I think to complain a bit. Of all the poems that he has left us, so many touching matters of faith, this one comes so close to what we know about ourselves that we do not know ourselves fully, that we believe ourselves to be better than we are, that we underplay and underestimate the extent to which self-interest governs so much of what we do, that we refuse to acknowledge that we continue and continue to show forth original sin, and that we put ourselves at the center of every universe that ever was. But that we are also capable of at least imagining that we could be otherwise. Our terrible self-centeredness and our capacity to transcend it. Our perverse brilliance and our essential, simple, organic goodness. The two cities, the city of God and the city of the earth, inextricably intertwined in each of us and in each of all of our groups. A counsel to despair? No. A counsel to humility, though.